focus on what is best for the future of our country.
In the address, Bush failed to say a single word about selling American ports to the United Arab Emirates. The highly controversial ports deal caused consternation in other quarters as well. Saturday, union truckers and longshoremen gathered outside the Wando Welch shipping terminal to protest the Bush administration's agreement to allow a United Arab Emirates company to take over significant operations at six U.S. ports. The demonstration was part of others staged around the country. Union leaders have said American companies that are willing to bid on the port operations should be given that chance. Most demonstrators held signs with the phrase, "Secure American ports." It's a bad deal all the way around, Charleston longshoreman Tory Fields said. Fears generated earlier today of a ricin poison scare have proven to be unfounded. An emergency management official in Texas said that a whitish-brown powder found in a roll of quarters at a University of Texas dormitory laundry was most likely not the deadly untreatable poison ricin. Initial tests suggested that the coins were coated in ricin powder. The EMS official based his opinion on the fact that no one had shown symptoms of being poisoned. Police in Kirkuk, Iraq, said so-called insurgents bombed a Shiite shrine Saturday. The shrine, not considered major in the Shia pantheon, commemorated an ancient imam. The shrine of Imam Ali al-Rida in Tuz Kumatu, located southeast of Kirkuk and visited frequently by Shiites, was destroyed in the bombing at approximately 4 a.m. Saturday, local Iraq time. And finally,
nip it in the bud.
America has lost one of its most beloved comics. Don Knotts, who played the bumbling Barney Fife on The Andy Griffith Show, passed away in a hospital in Los Angeles Friday night. Don Knotts was 81 years old. For Fourth Estate Radio News, I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. I was scrounging around the underbelly of political chat rooms yesterday, and I wandered into a room that was having a rather spirited debate about Iraq. One of the protagonists, a typical right-wing slug, was demanding that his left-wing opponent tell him what the democratic plan was for Iraq. The left-wing guy, like it always seems with us, was trying to make a smart, decent point about U.S. policy and humanitarianism, etc., etc., and as always, was getting nowhere. And the reason for that is that it's a stupid argument to begin with. The war with Iraq is a production of the neoconservative division of the Republican Party, and they weren't interested in what Democrats or anyone else for that matter had to say about it. As soon as Mr. Bush took office, they had their sights set on Iraq as part of a plan to control the entire Middle East. And the Democrats, being a minority in the House and Senate, didn't really have a whole lot to say about it. Of course, I can't speak for the Democratic Party. I mean, I'm just a guy with a mic and an opinion, right? But I do have a good idea on how to deal with Iraq and clean up our own government at the same time. It's very simple, really. What we do is start drafting right-wing pundits and war bloggers, college Republicans, and Pat Robertson's list of donators. Also the families of every congressman and senator who voted for the war, Democrats included. It'd all be over in a week and a lot of useless blowhards would be dead. Then we can at least have a serious discussion about what to do in Iraq. I'll get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Head on.
He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts. The issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-443-2366. for Head On. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head On.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of Flip the State Radio. My name is John Fox, and sitting over on the other side of the planet from me is my buddy Bruce Birch. Say good day, Bruce.
Good day, Bruce.
Good day, everyone. This is Bruce Birch for Flip the State. It's been a crazy week, man. What have you been doing, John? Because I'm interested in knowing what's going on down in Australia this week, man.
Well, a little bit later, in the next half hour, we're going to have, we've done a bit of a long form, got down on the streets and did some actual news gathering. We covered the fact that the maintenance workers that work for the Sydney Opera House are being screwed out of 20% of their pay with 2 weeks' notice by a new American contractor under the new IR laws that I've been speaking on and on about for, you know, the past couple of months. Now, the laws aren't even in effect, but we have our first casualties coming up, and I'm just going to wait for the piece to tell the story. But, hey, man, you remember that story that I read from it because this was your story. But you remember a few weeks back, Bones?
Oh, yes, I do. I do. I remember the story, and this is the story of, dare I say it, Aleister Crowley? No, Aleister Cook, I'm sorry.
that was my mistake the last time.
yeah, tell me about, you know, so you dug up a link that has something to do with the fact that this bag of bones got found, right?
Well, check this out, man. From the BBC, we've got four charged over U.S. bones theft. U.S. authorities have charged four men with looting bones and body parts from more than 1,000 corpses and selling them for medical transplants. Brooklyn District Attorney Charles Hines said the scam was like something out of a cheap horror movie, right? Among other things, people like, you know, the body of BBC broadcaster Aleister Cook, who died age 95 in 2004, was among those used in the racket. The lawyer for one of the suspects, former dentist Michael Mastromanaro, or whatever, said his client denied the charges. The indictment also named two of his employers in the case. In some bones and organs and tissue were allegedly sold to Mr. whatever his name is, Biomedical Tissue Services, to underwriting clients for implants. Death certificates and consent forms are alleged to have been doctored. Here we go. To make it appear the donations were legitimate, stolen parts from Aleister Cook, who died from cancer, were allegedly shown to have come from a healthy 85-year-old who died from a heart attack. They're also alleged to have replaced stolen bones with PVC piping.
PVC piping?
PVC piping.
You said PVC piping, right?
Yeah. And Hines, the district attorney, says the amount of callousness here is incalculable. What happened here is something out of a cheap horror movie. But for the thousands of relatives of the deceased whose body parts were used for profit, the recipients of the suspected parts, this was no bad movie. This was for real. I can't believe it, man.
Well, you know, again, you know, oh my gosh. And you know, we talked about this, this has been like two months ago?
Man, and we've gotten a lot of mileage out of that bit in one of our promos, you know. That one's been able to run for weeks without getting old. But I mean, we're going to have to do a new one because this is, I mean, this just goes beyond insane. I just feel like, you know, I've just walked into the Twilight Zone.
Well, you know, and rest assured, dear listeners of Fourth Estate Radio, we will stay on top of this story until someone is either convicted or they find the bones, one of the two. This is crazy, John.
Wait, what happens? What happens when the cases come down? I mean, they're going to order like the bones returned back to the rightful owners.
Oh my gosh! And dental implants. People are going to have to screw out their teeth and hand them in. I mean, what's going to go on there?
You know, I'm laughing, but it's just because it's so awful. It's so painful. And speaking of awful and painful, I've said that, you know, if Howard steps down, we have this slight chance that the next Australian government could be the Abbott and Costello government, okay? Well, Mr. Costello, our lovely treasurer, has been out spreading love to the Australian Muslim community.
And how, John, might he be spreading the love?
Well, here's how he's spreading the love. In the Sydney Morning Herald, we have Costello to violent Muslims. Get out. And it kind of opens saying, the treasurer Peter Costello has criticized confused, mushy, misguided multiculturalism and told Muslim immigrants to leave violent cultural baggage at the door. Now, he continued to say, before entering a mosque, visitors are asked to take off their shoes, he told the Sydney Institute last night. This is a sign of respect. If you have a strong objection into walking in your socks, don't enter the mosque. Before becoming an Australian, you will be asked to subscribe to certain values. We have strong objections to those values. Don't come to Australia.
So basically, and you know, by the way, I just wanted to mention that it sounded like to me that the guy had a future, perhaps in poetry. But so basically, in Australia now, it's okay for the highest levels of government to basically tell the Muslims that to get out. Is that the deal?
Well, yeah, and it's this, and you know, they're masking it in this idea of, you know, assimilate or die. And my good friend Weeze at Machine Gun Keyboard, if you want to have a look at some great photoshopping, Weeze covers some of this stuff. And over at Machine Gun Keyboard, he's got a post where he's done up Johnny Howard as a member of the Borg, and it says resistance is futile.
Resistance is futile.
You know, you know. We've had all kinds of idiots doing stupid things. You know, I mean, I think it was last week I mentioned about Representative Dana Vale down here, who made the absolutely insane comments that Australia was aborting itself into a Muslim nation. I don't remember me talking about that. So, I mean, the right wingers have been batting a thousand when it comes to making the immigrants feel warm and fuzzy being in the lucky country.
Well, you know, and I just wanted to say, you know, I think it's what's especially interesting about that is that this is 2006, you know, John, and what amazes me, I mean, this sounds just like, you know, y'all don't like it, cheer, y'all can pack your stuff up and go on back there to Africa.
Aside from the fact that, you know, we brought them over on slave ships, but we won't talk about any of that.
It is
that same thing, and, you know, always remembering when talking about the people in this government, Johnny Howard, up until he decided to start going into federal politics, all the way up until 1984, supported the idea of returning to the White Australia policy, which included things like removing Aboriginal children from their families strip them of their culture, put them into white schools, and try, because they actually had plans for how many generations it would take to make them no longer Aboriginal.
Is it the one-drop rule there, too?
Say again?
Is it the one-drop rule there, too? Have you ever heard of the one-drop rule, John?
I'm not sure. Please clarify, because I'm afraid to go with what I'm thinking.
Well, the one-drop rule is that in the olden days, if you had one drop of black blood in your body, then you were considered to be black.
No. They kind of went the opposite direction, that a black person, if assimilated into white culture and white bloodlines after enough generations, could separate from actually being from the barbaric, backward Aboriginal, as they put it.
Oh,
you got to remember, this
world is just so full of hate. It amazes me. It really does amaze me. You had
something that you wanted to.
Well, yeah, there's a story that's sort of tied into this, and I wanted apparently in Orlando, Florida, there was a rally today a Florida neo-Nazi rally in March that went through a predominantly black neighborhood in Orlando, Florida. And apparently it was a fistfight that broke out, and police made more than a dozen arrests today. And most of the arrests came after fights between supporters of the National Socialist Movement and angry counter-demonstrators. Notice how they call that. Supporters of the National Socialist Movement and angry counter-demonstrators. First of all, that you know what they're trying to frame there, right? But anyway, about 30 members of the neo-Nazi
it's
group.
More opposite world, I reckon.
Yeah, more opposite world. It's, you know, let's call the, you know, these guys go marching through a predominantly black neighborhood, and already in the second paragraph they're being painted as they're just, you know, marching through the, you know. They were handing out little swastika flowers. And, anyway, about 30 members of the neo-Nazi group wore khaki uniforms, black boots, and red armbands with swastikas during the march throughout the Orlando neighborhood of Paramore. They were confronted by more than 100 protesters, some holding signs, including ones that said, "Stop the hate, stop the violence, and love everyone." You know, this is the second march in the United States in the last probably 4 months. The first one was in, I believe, Cincinnati, Ohio. Was it Cincinnati where they had the big thing over there recently, John?
Yeah. I think I do remember something about that. But
it really blows my mind. We are about to go out to a break, though, John. You want to check us out?
Yeah. So don't forget, we're chatting at the Tom Hartmann chat room. Tom Hartmann, the2ends.com. Follow the chat link. Blogging at 4thestateradio.com. And it's 18 minutes after the hour, and we're going to be back with Bruce and me and some more top stories.
The Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I've watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, you know, get a backbone, for God's sake. You know, stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything, you know, anything else, is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, "This is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing, you know, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future." This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hello, I'm Martin Sheen. When I was growing up in Dayton, Ohio, I had an unforgettable mentor who believed in me and encouraged me to pursue my dreams. Today, there are millions of children across this country waiting for a mentor to help them. Improving the world starts with one child. Please, become a volunteer mentor for Mentoring USA. Give children the chance to develop and flourish and share in the future that belongs to them.
You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio, and this is Bruce Birch, and over there is John Fox. Hey, John.
Hey, man.
And just wanted to make everyone aware, we are still involved in our fundraising drive in which we're trying to increase our capacity so that we can get John off of the phone. If you want to get John off the phone, this is what you got to do. You got to go to fourthestateradio.com. And when you go to fourthestateradio.com, you got to look at that little blue button, and it says donation. And if you click that button, it'll send you to a little page where you can decide what you can give to help John get off the phone. John, you want to get off the phone?
Yeah, man, it's starting to hurt.
Well, we want to get John off the phone. So so go and help John get off the phone because, you know, It's killing the man. It's killing him. He needs to get off the phone. Okay. Also,
John off the pots.
Yeah. Also, we are
John off the pots appeal.
John off the pots appeal. That's with an S on the end, by the way. plain old telephone system. For those of you who aren't aware what pots is, but there's also we're also streaming world freaking wide on White Rose Society. Thank you, Ben Birch. For what you do over there, man. Fantastic. John, I understand that you have a story about an international multi-conglomerate company that is destined to take over the world. You want to tell us about that?
Well, not just to take over the world, but agriculture and infect this environment. I mean, this is one of the most disgusting companies on the planet. And I'm speaking, of course, of Monsanto. Now, Gail posted this earlier this week on our blog at 12harmonic.com, and via Reuters, they report, a coalition of farmers, consumers, and environmental activists on Thursday sued the U.S. government over its approval of a biotech alfalfa the critics say will spell havoc for farmers and the environment. Opening another front in the battle over genetically modified crops, the lawsuit contends that the U.S. Department of Agriculture improperly is allowing Monsanto Corporation to sell an herbicide-resistant alfalfa seed while failing to analyze the public health, environmental, and economic consequences of that action. The USDA failed to do a full environmental review when they deregulated the genetically engineered alfalfa, said Will Rastov, an attorney for Center for Food Safety, going to wreak untold dangers into the environment. The lawsuit asked that this go to rescind the USDA's decision until a full environmental review has been completed. Now, as we know, Monsanto likes to create genetically altered versions of things, and you can't control the spread of them. And
things
they kind of end up liking to, you know, infect other farmers' crops, then sue them for copyright infringement.
Okay, explain that again, John, what Monsanto likes to do. They like to create genetically modified versions of crops, right?
Okay, yeah. And so, you know, and for some reason they say that it's better for this reason and or that reason, right? And what they end up doing is once these modified seeds of whatever sort end up getting out into the environment, they end up cross-pollinating with other actual non-engineered ones. So then farmer, you know, down the wind way.
Yeah, yes.
Top of alfalfa, per se, with this instance. And they're going to end up suing him for copyright infringed seed from them. And this is a company that has worked very hard to make things like genetically modifying the plants so that they don't produce their own seed, so that you're forced to buy new seed every year, and that ends up infecting other crops and ends up making it that the only way you can have maybe wheat is if you're buying it from Monsanto.
And of course, let me guess, the Republican-controlled Congress and presidency are all down with this, right?
Oh, of course they are. Monsanto, I mean, we're talking about, this chemical company is responsible for the fact that you have, this pus-producing thing in American milk, and it's a chemical that's been deemed illegal in all countries except for the United States. It has no health benefit, and all it does is create more pus so the milk tastes better.
Oh, God, that's gross.
But they sell this thing in mad quantities, and in fact, I think it was Mike Papantonio was supposed to be doing a thing on this on ABC in the United States, and they canned it. Monsanto came in and told ABC to pull the plug on the story.
Oh,
it was Fox News. I've just been told by our producer here. It was Fox News, actually, and it was a big story. They were going to explain this whole thing, and I'm getting some information here shortly. But what I have here is you can see about it in the film The Corporation, which has been something of discussion again. They speak all about this, and this thing shows no benefit for anyone, and it's actually kind of dangerous for children. And every drop of American milk done by a major manufacturer has it in it. You're all drinking it. Thank God we don't have it here. And they've actually quashed all the science.
Okay, so we got people walking around with different people.
Cancer.
Okay, John, we got people walking around with different people's bones in their bodies, and now we got pus in our milk. All right, this is turning out to be a really disgusting show so far.
Well, it is a disgusting show, and you know we're going to have a chance to catch a breather because. The next segment, I'm going to just walk away from this because this outfit gets me almost more angry than any other. I mean, Gail even mentions in the post that, you know, to do business with these people is is being complicit with evil, and that is evil. And these people don't give a damn about the health of anybody, and they're actually into hijacking agriculture from people, and it's just frightening. But coming up in the next segment, it's actually a bit of a pre-recorded thing. I'm going to have my special report from the Sydney Opera House, where the CFMEU, which is the Construction, Forestry, Mining, and Energy Union, were protesting the fact that the Australian workers that have been taking care of the Sydney Opera House building itself, like taking care of those legendary sails and the hand-laid wooden floors and whatnot. Now, some of these guys have been there since the place opened. Are being forced out to sign a new contract under these new labor laws, given 2 weeks, a 20%
pay cut, right?
And there's a guy who's been working on the job for about 2 years, 32-year immigrant from Argentina. He hurt his back a few weeks ago on the job. And so he was on light duties, which is that thing where you go back to work doing things that you can do while you heal. And
right,
he's
right.
To go back to full work. The new American contractor has told him he doesn't have a job. He has a pre-existing injury. He doesn't have a job.
There's a joke here in construction, in non-union construction in the States. It's called if you fall off a ladder, you're fired before you hit the floor.
Yeah, and what makes this, you know, it may only be 10 guys with their heads on the chopping block here, but this is Australia's national iconic building.
Yeah.
I mean, how disgusting is
this? It's absolutely disgusting.
We're gonna run this piece in the next segment, and then anyone out there who's listening in the chat room, whatever, give us a ring at 304-658-3333
or
after the segment and talk to us. What was that?
Go ahead, John.
All right, man. I think we're on a break. We got that story up next, and we'll be back on Fourth Estate Radio.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
Jesus said, if you love me, then you feed my sheep. But like Jesus, we've been betrayed.
Gotta be my brother's keeper. Don't need me strong or weaker. I got to land in my helping hand. No matter what it's called us, your God is still my brother. I got to help him if I can.
From Rebel Hauer, one of the construction, forestry, and mining and energy union organizers of Friday evening's picket at the Sydney Opera House in protest at being told to take a $10,000 to $20,000 a year pay cut or get lost by the American corporation United Group Services, who have taken over maintenance of the building. The Sydney Morning Herald reported Thursday,
maintenance workers at the Sydney Opera House are facing big pay cuts after an American-based multinational won a contract for the site and introduced individual contracts, a union warns. Andrew Ferguson, New South Wales Secretary of the Construction, Forestry, Mining and Energy Union, said the new contractors, United Group Services, have refused to re-employ a union delegate and an injured worker on light duties when it takes over maintenance in March. The other eight workers had been offered individual contracts at much lower rates. They've been told to sign it or piss off, Mr. Ferguson said. One worker, Francisco Rocha, who had spent 10 years working on the building's iconic sails and panelled floors, said yesterday he was asked to sign a contract that would drop his pay from about $900 a week to just over $700, a cut of more than $10,000 a year.
After the rally, I had a chance to get a few minutes with the state organizer for the CFMEU, Robert Cara, and the man with the megaphone, Rebel Hauer.
John's with Robert Cara here down at the Sydney Opera House. They just had their march down here with the CFMEU. Can you kind of just give me in a short bit for me exactly what is this whole march about?
Okay, basically, we've got a company down here that was doing the facilities maintenance on the Opera House, on the famous Sydney Opera House, for about last 13 years under a union-endorsed EBA, Enterprise Bargaining Agreement. A new company's come in now, who'll be taking over the maintenance on the Opera House as of March the 6th. The workers who've worked with the previous facilities management company have basically, they've been given, which is equates to an ultimatum, really. You either sign an individual work contract or you're out the door. You can get lost. You've got no job here. The workers under that new individual workplace contract, they're looking like if they do sign, they'll be about $300 a week gross worse off under that current...
That's somewhere between 15 and 20% a week of their income gone, is that right?
That's absolutely right, and we're talking about massive pay cuts. We're talking about a company here whose net estimated profit for the last financial year alone is $70 million. They're asking our members to basically, the contract here for them is 2 years. They said that Union EBA will increase their costs, their wages costs by $600,000 over that 2 year period. So in effect, they're asking our members to take a $600,000 pay cut over those 2 years.
It's insane, man. Next week you're coming back out 5:30
Wednesday night.
Right on, man. You keep us posted, man.
I will, brother.
Well done, man. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
Take care. I'm with Rebel Hanlon. He was the MC for this evening's event, man. Can you give us your thoughts on what went down tonight?
Well, basically what's gone down today is that we've seen about 50 trade unionists turn up at the front of the Opera House here to give a peaceful protest and our thoughts about 10 of our members being offered AWAs who now will be financially around $20,000 a year worse off.
So in this current economy, I reckon a lot of those workers are probably just making their bills, their mortgages and whatnot. So you're looking at workers actually really, really being in dire straits, losing this kind of income, I would think.
We're basically looking at the state of Sydney here is one of the dearest states to live in throughout the growing economy of the world.
Yes.
The price of fuel in this country has gone up to well over, approaching $1.50 a litre. We're seeing mortgages even out at Western Suburbs Sydney approaching up near $500,000. We're looking at workers here losing $20,000. They don't need a mortgage increase. They've just had a 2-3% mortgage increase just to survive. We've seen the price of groceries go up due to the drought that's been hitting this country. We've seen the prices of nearly everything in life go up.
Because of oil.
Because of an unjusted war that we had. In this we had in sending troops over to a war that was no needed to be had, and which is now finally being sought after by the American people for a Bush war and for a Johnny Howard war. But the economy in Australia is on the borderline of a recession. We're seeing our workers here being treated with total disregard. We had a Prime Minister who promised workers that he would give workers a choice. These workers have been given a choice, all right. Take what's on the table or you don't have a job.
Yeah, my way or the highway.
That's exactly right. We've seen basic civil rights in this country being taken away from fellow trade unionists and working class of this country. We've seen the rights for the legal right to protest in this country being taken away. We've been seeing the right for freedom of speech in this country being taken away due to this government passing laws in this country that now can be thrown up against that people that can be jailed if they say the wrong thing, that can be anti-government too much. Well, I say to all your listeners that this little comrade won't be backing up the rat track. I will be speaking the voice of what the workers say in this country, and what we say in this country is that we have had an absolute gutful of being pushed around. We have had a gutful of being dictated to. We want to be governed and treated with dignity, respect, and also with the freedom to be able to say what we wish, when we wish.
Strong words from two men holding steadfast to the belief that we all have the same rights as human beings and we all deserve respect. I leave you with the Rebel Hauer's own words at the end of the rally. This is John Fox reporting from Sydney for Fourth Estate Radio News on the Head On Radio Network and Workers Radio Sydney.
All right, well, Perry, let's do one more time. The granola Ayatollah of canola, Charles Ford, founder of Grassoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told you that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fat, some flour, flax, hemp, seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel, not only their feed. Small towns can be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more eco-wrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grassoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Cliff Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? This is Olivia Newton-John. As soon as you get your diagnosis, you can go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit, and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org. The first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
There is a place where a total stranger will give you their blood. There is a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people from seven states away will turn up at your door and give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where a person who doesn't look like you, talk like you, or dress like you will stretch out their hand and put it across your shoulders and say, "Everything is going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other, and it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Please call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org.
Everybody, welcome back to Radio. Welcome back, everybody. I think we're going to move on to our Occupation Watch segment here shortly. I believe it's about 46 minutes past the hour. And don't forget, you can ring in and talk about anything you want to talk about at 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. Bruce, what do you have for us for the Occupation Watch segment?
Well, you know, as I do every time we do this, I have the actual numbers that we, you know, we do this every week. We run down the numbers and the human cost of occupation. And, you know, before I go any further, I just wanted to go ahead and plug the website that we get this information from, because these guys are on top of it all the time, every day, every night. And that is at anti-war.com/casualties. It's anti-war.com/casualties. Ring their hit counters. Human cost of occupation this week, since the war began on 3/19/03, nearly 3 years ago, 2,286 U.S. soldiers have died in Iraq. And since the mission accomplished speech on deck of the ship that is 2,149 soldiers that have been lost, and the Iraqis, of course, have lost anywhere from 100 to 130,000 soldiers. Civilians. And that's not even to mention the 70 or some odd people that got killed, I think, yesterday, John. But it's getting worse and worse and worse and worse, and it really is blowing my mind.
It just continues to get more and more kind of tragic, as, you know, we know how unnecessary this whole thing was. You know, it just breaks your heart when you think about the actual life cost.
Yeah, it absolutely does. It absolutely does. I know that we want to get on ahead with this story here, but I wanted to, you know, make sure that everyone is aware of that statistic every week. I think, not enough is it mentioned in the news media about the true human cost of this fool's errand that George W. Bush has put the country in Iraq. And the long-term consequences of that, you know, obviously have yet to be played out, but I'm sure they will be, you know. But I did want to, you know, there's an interesting story that sort of came to light this week, and it was actually brought up, I believe, on the Tom Hartman radio program.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that there is a certain amount of speculation floating around out there that the Axis of Iniquity folks, meaning the U.S. and and Britain chiefly, are actually booby-trapping Iraqi civilians and using them to they're saying that some of these car bombs, etc., are what I would term false flag operations, meaning that they are actually created by the by the people that are they're supposed to be against. I guess it's kind of an interesting thing.
Well, you know, actually, it's funny. Last night, while we were having dinner with a mate, we were watching a documentary on Malta on how it was the most bombed place on the planet during World War II, right?
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that hit, and just this reminds me, one of the things that Hitler did is he dropped booby-trapped candies on the Maltese people so the children would go pick them up.
And what was in the candies?
They were explosive.
They were explosives, okay.
Wow. Hitler targeted the children directly. I'm getting some more information on that because I was actually busy cooking as this whole thing was going on. So as I'm being passed this, it was toys, not candy, and candy. So they were actually dropping specifically to try and target the children on this teeny island. And I'll tell you the story of that island, of the fight that they put on. Oh my word, I had no idea. I want to learn more about that place because, I mean, it was like almost handed to Hitler as a gift, I believe, at one point. It's an insane place, and it's a little island, man. But, you tie this kind of thing in with, we reported weeks ago about, there was another story similar about here the British Army who were disguised as Arabs and were driving a car bomb. Right. And they were arrested and the British Army ended up busting them out away from the sovereign Iraqi police force.
Right.
So, I mean, here I think is like that other hidden, really deadly propaganda or part of the propaganda war there, creating a. Feel like the place is in chaos because, as it comes to light, they continue to stir up more chaos to try and, pull us off the stand.
Well, I think what's to me what is especially heinous about this story that I was talking about is that the British and American soldiers are actually creating some of the violence. Okay, all right. So if that's the case, then if you think about it, it makes perfect sense. But there was a report that came out. This is last year. This is documented last year, September the 20th in 2005, that apparently undercover British soldiers wearing traditional Arab headscarves were recorded firing at Iraqi police, and that if occupation forces are supposed to be collaborating with the Iraqi authorities, why did the British forces have to storm the prison using tanks and armored vehicles to liberate the undercover agents?
Exactly.
Apparently,
it just stinks from the get-go.
Right. British forces apparently used up to 10 tanks, supported by helicopters, to smash through the walls of the jail and free the two, not 20, or not 30, not 40, two British servicemen. So. It really is quite remarkable, and the report that came out that I had read or that I had heard about was, and I'm trying to do the research on following this up, is that apparently a story came out in a Russian in the Russian media.
Yeah.
That said that apparently
I'm
sorry.
I have that story in front of me.
Okay. Well, carry on.
Okay. Well, actually, this is actually something that Gail found, and it's on the 12th Harmonic blog, saying, as a general, she opens up saying, as a general disclaimer, I've just come across this Russian site this extract comes from, but I can't speak for its veracity. But she found this after reacting to hearing the Tom Hartman discussion where this came.
You still there, John?
And she says, say again?
No, go ahead. You just went away for a second.
Anyway, the website said, here we go with our rocky technology. Anyway, a few days ago, an American man checkpoint confiscated the driver's license of a driver and told him to report to an American military camp near Baghdad Airport for interrogation in order to retrieve his license. The next day, the driver did visit the camp, and he was allowed in the camp with his car. Then he was admitted to a room for interrogation that lasted half an hour. At the end of the session, the American you, but you do know that that Iraq is now sov affairs. Hence, we have forwarded your papers and license to Al-Kadima police station for processing. Therefore, go there with the clearance to reclaim your license. At the police station, ask for the lieutenant, blah, 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 before, and rush over there before he leaves his shift work. The driver did leave in a hurry, but was soon alarmed with a feeling of his car was driving as if carrying a heavy load. He also became suspicious of a low-flying helicopter that kept hovering overhead, as if trailing him. Then stopped the car and inspected it carefully, found nearly 100 kilograms of explosives hidden in the back seat and along the two back doors.
And so they did. Was this? There's no documentation of that, though, or isn't there?
We're still looking for it. But I mean, this is one of those things. I will follow on this. We will follow on this because we've seen this kind of activity before, and you know, we have consistently said that, you know, this whole thing is kind of a charade for basically a global cut-up of Iraq and maybe the greater Middle East as things develop, you know, with the scratching at Iran's door and everything else that's going on. So, you know, I'm very suspicious of seeing things like this. I'm very suspicious of it, you know. I mean, just, and there's the other stories about, you know, what is it, 98 deaths actually, you know, considered murder in our detainment camps. You know, 98 deaths in custody in Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, and, you know, there's been no charges more than, you know, like maybe a couple of weeks, you know, slap on the wrist kind of thing. I mean, we're killing people and making them disappear. So, you know, booby trapping somebody's car, I think, is not a very, very far reach. So anyway, man, I took over your little segment there. I didn't mean to, but arg, arg, arg. I'm an angry guy. That rally got me really fired up. So we're taking your calls toll-free at 1-877-4-HIT-ON. And Bruce and I will be back at the top of the next hour. We'll see you in a bit.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path, one that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
It's Grace.
We're actually very boring people, Rama. That's why we call ourselves homebodies.
Well, it's Rama.
Sure. I mean, yeah, you know, group sex for us is when we're both involved.
That's a
It's really, really smart.
It worked the shoe
we're
leather
a nice
group.
Little Petri dish here in Vermont because you can experiment.
Join Grace and Rama, homebodies, every Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the web at homebodies.ramabahama.net.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Fourth Estate Radio News. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Republican congressional leaders are on the verge of an agreement to capitulate to White House demands to allow the United Arab Emirates to run ports in several American cities. The GOP leadership is hammering out a compromise to allow the deal to proceed with an additional 45-day investigation period. New Jersey Governor John Corzine said Saturday that the Bush administration is being, quote, casual about our security, unquote. Corzine's remarks came in the Democrats' response to George Bush's weekly radio address. In that radio address, George W. Bush said that he will talk about energy issues, health care, and his war in Iraq when he meets with the nation's governors Sunday and Monday. Bush also called for Americans to be less political.
To improve health care, keep America competitive, achieve greater energy independence, and protect our nation, we must put aside politics and focus on what is best for the future of our country.
In the address, Bush failed to say a single word about selling American ports to the United Arab Emirates. The highly controversial ports deal caused consternation in other quarters as well Saturday. Union truckers and longshoremen gathered outside the Wando Welch shipping terminal to protest the Bush administration's agreement to allow a United Arab Emirates company to take over significant operations at six U.S. ports. The demonstration was part of others staged around the country. Union leaders have said American companies that are willing to bid on the port operations should be given that chance. Most demonstrators held signs with the phrase, "Secure American Ports." It's a bad deal all the way around, Charleston longshoreman Tory Fields said. Fears generated earlier today of a ricin poison scare have proven to be unfounded. An emergency management official in Texas said that a whitish-brown powder found in a roll of quarters at a University of Texas dormitory laundry was most likely not the deadly, untreatable poison ricin. Initial tests suggested that the coins were coated in ricin powder. The EMS official based his opinion on the fact that no one had shown symptoms of being poisoned. Police in Kirkuk, Iraq, said so-called insurgents bombed a Shiite shrine Saturday. The shrine, not considered major in the Shia pantheon, commemorated an ancient imam. The shrine of Imam Ali al-Ridha in Tuz Kumatu, located southeast of Kirkuk and visited frequently by Shiites, was destroyed in the bombing at approximately 4 a.m. Saturday local Iraq time. And finally,
nip it in the bud!
America has lost one of its most beloved comics. Don Knotts, who played the bumbling Barney Fife on The Andy Griffith Show, passed away in a hospital in Los Angeles Friday night. Don Knotts was 81 years old. For Fourth Estate Radio News, I'm Bob Kincaid.
The Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. I just learned today that Bruce McPherson, California's Secretary of State and a typical Republican hack, has certified Diebold voting machines for use in California. These machines lie at the heart of the Republican plan to give the illusion of democracy while secretly destroying it. As usual with Republican strategy, this decision was made after hours on the Friday before a three-day weekend. You know, sometimes it's hard for me to figure out just what to talk about in these reports because there's so much going on and so much disinformation out there that it's impossible for me to put it all into 90 seconds of talk. It's gotten to the point where reading the news is like looking at a train wreck. I mean, you don't want to look, but you just can't help it. And this news was just one more item in a daily dose of bad news for all Americans, even the right-wingers who think they're benefiting from it. A lot of us on the left are working hard to try and prevent the total breakdown of this country. If things continue as they have, there will come a time when no political process will be available to us, only desperate measures by desperate people. I don't want that to happen, and neither do millions of others. And I think the only way we can keep this from happening is to make sure that we at least have free, fair, and accurate elections. And in order to do that, we have to be always on the alert so that we can shine a light on this corrupt and criminal behavior. Diebold, their slogan says, never sleeps, and neither should we. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Am.
Listen live every night. Head on radio.com.
Your computer is your radio.
No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
Fox, and over on the other side of the planet in North Carolina is my mate, Bruce Birch. How you going, Bruce?
Doing great, John.
Well, you know what? I reckon opening up this second hour here, we should turn this into let it open for the listeners to guide the content for a bit. So if you got something you need to bring up, ring us up on 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. What's going on, man?
Oh, you had a story, something about Howard you wanted to talk about?
Oh, yeah, I wanted to go there. I'm sorry, you know, I thought you were trying to jump something in there that I missed. But, okay, here, this is an interesting piece. There's a columnist by the name of Michael Carlton here in Australia who had this thing on the Sydney Morning Herald talking about we've now had 10 years of the Howard government, you know. And, you know, so they're all having their little retrospectives and the bought media is all playing how, you know, he's been good for the economy and all this stuff, you know, as they continue to plunder all the infrastructure and all the services that made Australia the lucky country to live in. But he says here, Paul Keating famously said shortly before he was tossed out in 1996 that if you change the government, you change the country. The change wrought by Howard has been profound, a tectonic shift to the populist politics of individual selfishness. On one hand, and corporate gigantism, on the other, underwritten by the cheap credit explosion. He kind of goes on talking about how, you know, we've become a bit for poverty, civil liberties, common decency. These are merely the vapid of being elites, who the Howard Eastas have brilliantly demonized as the new class enemy of all right-thinking Australians. The average man does not want to be free. He wants to be safe, he told my friend Henry Louis Mencken, wrapping himself in desert camo and a flag every possible photo opportunity. Howard has hijacked the Anzac legend to radiate an illusion of safety, even as our lapdog membership of the Coalition of the Willing makes us less safe. Some people are not real impressed with Howard after 10 years.
Yeah, apparently, I mean, you know, he has done for Australia what our buddy George has done for the United States, eh?
Oh, yeah, man, he's the down under, you know, Tony Blair puppy dog to America. whatever they want.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm glad to see that, you know. After I saw some very lip service-y stuff kind of scanning by me when some of the mainstream networks were covering the Howard thing, you know, it was nice to see Mike come out and kind of, you know, throwing back and saying, now, if you actually look at what's gone on in the last 10 years, everything that made Australian society secure has been minimalized. They've gone to basically what is a private road building system here, which in like the state of New South Wales is exploding in their face terribly. They, you know, basically giving private companies to charge pretty much whatever they wish for you to get to work. And then once they build these private roads, they block all the side roads so that it makes it virtually impossible for anyone to take any other route except for the corporate road. And the thing that's been slightly disappointing is when I first moved here, I thought the Australians were more cynical than this. But I have to be kind of impressed with the way Howard's done things. He's really pulled the wool over their eyes. But a few people are starting to wonder exactly what the hell is really going on with what's happened with the AWB scandal. I mean, you know, our Australian wheat board thing, throwing $300 million to Saddam Hussein to guarantee the wheat trade. And there are people coming out of the woodwork now, man.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, you know, the whole thing about selfishness, though, I think goes a little bit deeper than just Howard or the Australian government. You know, the bottom line is that many people are not interested so much in civil liberties because it requires a little bit of work. Okay, they're not. They would rather sit back and fuss at their jobs or yell at the television or, you know, instead of doing what it takes to retain a lot of those civil liberties that this story was talking about. You know, selfishness itself, I don't know, is, you know, definitely can be born of and created by an atmosphere that can be put forth by a government. But I think that there is a selfishness within each person, whether they're Australians or Americans or Englishmen or whoever they are, you know, that that they can tap into when they, you know, especially, you know, when we're being told you don't need to do anything except for just continue to spend money. And that, and if you do that, then the terrorists don't win. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm totally with you there. You know that, you know, God, I can go so many different directions here, but you know, it's just the fact that, you know, the experience of John Howard on Australia really has been very, very similar to what I think was started in the 80s with Reagan, which was this very, very me, suddenly all, you know, there was this idea that even, you know, Christianity started taking that Calvinist vibe that, you know, if you are monetarily well off, it's because God will.
I'm sorry, I missed that last bit, John.
These kinds of things to, but, well, the Calvinists have that ideal that, you know, if you've done well and you have amassed wealth, that means God loves you more.
Huh. The old God thing again, yeah. God
right.
loves you more, so and, that, and therefore you have more for, more money that's printed by a government. You know, I was listening to Ring of Fire earlier this evening. Great show on Air America, but one of the things that there it was the show was about separation of church and state. And in this show, they were talking about coins that were, there's a passage in the Bible where Jesus talks about render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's and render unto God that which is God's. And I can't help. Oh, you did? Okay. Well, I can't help but think that, you know, the problem here isn't that. You know, we could go a thousand different directions with the religious thing. You know, but you know, it's that people want to be taken, you know, they want to be safe. And here's the problem. The problem, at least within the United States, and it looks like that Australia is going the same direction. The problem is that people want to be safe, but they don't want to have to actually provide any of their own safety. You know, and the other part of that, too, is that, you know, we have a government in place in the United States and one that looks like it's, you know, fairly similar in Australia that is basically saying, on the one hand, we're going to keep you safe, we're going to keep the ports safe, we're going to keep terrorists away from you, but on the same token, you know, they are creating instability worldwide that also creates more terrorism. Worldwide. And
absolutely.
If following that line of reasoning, if there is more terrorism worldwide, you know, it's only a matter of time before it spills out of places that it can be readily perpetrated and into places such as Australia, the United States, UK, Spain, you know, all of these other places that terrorism has touched and has, you know, it amazes me. So we go over there and we shoot people and we fight with our bullets and our bombs and our and we create havoc with planted car bombs, and we turn around, you know, and then say to, oh, we're trying to keep you safe. Yeah, well, that's bull. You know, I call bull on that. Because to me, keeping someone safe involves creating an atmosphere of safety, not just holding, you know, standing at the border and saying you can't come in. It's about creating an atmosphere of safety. It's about creating respect, not fear.
Well, here's an interesting thing. When I was down at the Sydney Opera House on Friday, right, I ended up making mates. And we all, wherever we're living, they kind of like bits of our own bubbles, right? Because as we're doing this thing, this young chap says to me, he says, so, you know, is there stuff like this in the States? And I'm going, well, of course, man. And, like, we're talking about the anti-terror stuff. And he says, so is that happening over there? And he was, like, a little bit didn't realize that actually Australia is probably 4 years behind the curve at the moment, right? And this kid, this young guy was not ignorant. He, you know, he knew his gig, knew what was going on in Australia. He had a good idea of what was going on with how it connected with America and everything else. But still, he didn't know about the NSA spying, right? He didn't know about, you know, like I started rolling some stuff off and he's like, no way! And I'm going, mate, I've been sitting here jumping up and down for like 4 years. Here, you know, and sure enough, we got voting machines coming here. You know, it's played out almost to a script, and it's somehow we have to get past that thing where we still live in our own little national bubbles, because I think, you know, it works to our detriment at some point. Like, you know, these workers' fights, man, it's all the same. Every country that's having these fights with these major corporations are having it with the same multinational corporations, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You know, the same, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah, you know, I think it's that next step of making sure that they can't divide and conquer, because now it is slowly turning into a global fight for every country's individual democracy. Because, you know, I mean, the situation where the World Bank can just say, you know, that law, that environmental law just doesn't really kind of work for us. It will just, these companies can just ignore it.
And it's, you know, it's creating instability worldwide. And, you know, so it's our job as radio hosts to try to create a conversation to bring people aboard to let us know what you think about this. I mean, you know, is it selfishness? Is it greed? Or is it just plain old sociopathy? I mean, you know, the bottom line here is that we have serious problems, and it's not just the United States. It's not just in Australia. It's not just in the UK.
There's no easy answer, man. So, hey, we want to hear what you have to say. Ring us at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. Tell us what you want to talk about. Tell us what we might be missing, and Bruce and I will be right back after this break.
The Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I've watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, you know, get a backbone, for God's sake. You know, stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything, you know, anything else, is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, this is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing, you know, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future. This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org. Thank you.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Woke up this morning, I suddenly realized we're all in this together. I started smiling, 'cause you were smiling, and we're all in this together. I'm made of atoms.
All right, you're listening to Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch, and on the other side of the planet is my good friend John Fox. John, how you doing, mate?
I'm doing good there, mate. Sorry,
fantastic.
Man, I actually thought I lost you there for a second. I kind of lost your end on in the internet, whatever void. So,
that's okay. I think I ended up in NSA.
Sorry about that, but why don't you take this segment away there, mate?
All right. Thank you. Ken Lay, I want to talk about Ken Lay for a minute. You know, if anyone wants to call in, we would love to hear from you. We'd love to talk with you. You can dial us at 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here at Head On Radio Network, you can dial in and you can talk to John and myself. But I wanted to talk to Ken Lay. This is a story that was off the top of the Raw Story website. Fantastic website, by the way, rawstory.com. Former Enron chairman Ken Lay, apparently, you know, the guy who robbed all those thousands, millions of old people, the same guy who apparently, had nothing to do with the collapse of Enron while he, sucked all the money out of it. Is now facing financial ruin. John, can you believe this?
Oh, baby!
Once at the pinnacle of Houston's financial and political elite with a fortune worth as much as $400 million, Lay, the former chairman of the Enron Corp., is now facing financial ruin. While he has talked about his shrinking wealth since Enron's collapsed, he has managed to keep up appearances, continuing to live in a full-floor apartment in the city's affluent River Oaks section. But already, according to personal financial records obtained by the New York Times, Lay has fallen out of the ranks of the city's millionaires with a stated net worth of less than $650,000. And, according to this article, is probably even on the optimistic side. His assets, for example, include $1.9 million held in a trust that is almost sure to be eaten up by his legal fees. You know, I got to tell you, John, nothing makes me happier than to read that.
Oh, mate, absolutely. And this is the Lay you can have, we'd like to have only one of. it's like he's not a potato chip. But this guy is just, this is one of those evil incarnate people. I mean, how you can actively trade energy and profit off of ripping off, old ladies, pensioners, whatnot, of their savings so that they can, have these extravagant lifestyles and whatnot, I bet, these are the type of people that I swear have never actually worked a day in their lives.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking that, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on Ken Lay. I think, though, that we probably do want to stay on top of at least this, story as he begins to lose the $650,000. I want to see the man show up at a homeless shelter. That's what I want to see. Living in a field in a tent.
That we were talking about before.
So, Oh, my goodness. Anyway, so there's the Ken Lay story. I did want to also try to cover something else here that I thought was just fantastic. You know, George Clooney, and, you know, this is not an entertainment show by any stretch of the imagination, but George Clooney has come out with a couple of films of late, one called Syriana and the other one Good Night and Good Luck. And he has been apparently been attacked and been called a traitor on a set of playing cards.
Oh, jeez. Whose playing cards are these?
I don't know. You know, I'm going to try to find them, though. Let's see. It doesn't. The story that I'm reading doesn't actually say. But apparently, it was he was on also on the cover of a magazine, being called a traitor. But he says, these are his words here. He says, "I think it's important to be on the right side of history." He goes, "I want to be on that deck of cards, and I want to be able to say that they boycotted my films. I want to be able to say I was on the cover of a magazine called A Traitor." He said, "I'm proud of those because those were badges of honor for me, because that was when you did it, when it was hard to do." You know, so he, whatever that means. But, you know, kudos on George Clooney for doing the right thing and for getting some media out there to try to change the minds of some of these knuckle dragging biscuit suckers out here. So, you know, I mean, this you know, so that's a good thing. I think it's fantastic. You know, his politics obviously are on the left, and maybe, you know, at some point we'll try to get him on the show. What do you think, John?
Oh man, hey, you go fishing, buddy. that would be something else. But I think I get it what he means there. When doing it, when you know, when it was hard to do. Like before the revolution catches on and the massive public figures out what is really going on, being one of the original first ones to stand there and go, "Hey, y'all got it all
wrong." Yes.
You know, I just great. I still haven't seen either film, and they're probably number one, number two on our list at the moment.
Well, you know, they are. And I think that, of course, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on that story either, but I just wanted to bring that up because I believe very strongly that we need to throw a bone to those people that are creating media that are truth tellers, you know. And George Clooney is one of them, you know. So that and you know, Keith Olbermann is another, you know, but as time goes on, we'll try to bring out some more of these folks and, you know. Clooney's funny though. I just thought that was great.
He's I've seen a few bits of video with him where you know different interview segments where people have tried to get him, and he's you know he's got his facts straight. He has his opinions in order, and you know he can go verbally slugging with the best of them and come up standing and smell like a rose, I reckon.
Indeed. Now the other last short story before we head over to our break, and that is. Very, very quickly, before we head over to our break, John, I have this one story, and that is that apparently, you know, recently the White House lost a bunch of emails directly related to the Valerie Plame investigation. Well, apparently Friday, the White House found 250 pages of emails from Vice President Dick Cheney's office that are related to this case. The emails are said to be explosive and may prove that Cheney played an active role in the effort to discredit Plame Wilson's husband, former Ambassador Joseph Wilson. Sources close to the probe said that the White House discovered the emails 2 weeks ago and turned them over to Fitzgerald last week. The sources added that the emails could prove that Cheney lied to FBI investigators when he was interviewed about the leak in 2004. And John? I'm thinking this is clearing the way for Condi Rice to be vice president.
Dude, whoa. Wow, that came out of nowhere. Are you serious?
I don't want to stay. I don't have a reputation, so I can't stake this on my reputation on this, but I would like to say that I think this is going to happen. But we're coming up on a break. It's about 29 minutes after the hour. This is Bruce Birch. Over there is John Fox. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio. Please give us a call. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. We'll be right back after this break.
fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
This is Bruce Birch, and you're back on Fourth Estate Radio with my friend John Fox over in Sydney, Australia, and it's dark. It's 8:30 there, right?
It's actually 3:30 in the afternoon, man. And you gotta warn a guy when you want to conjure up an image of like Condi for VP. I almost hurled on my microphone.
Well, you know, we'll talk about that some here in a little while. But I do understand, John, that we have a caller, Luke, from Tennessee on line one. Luke, how are you doing tonight?
I'm fine, Bruce. How are you and John?
Hey, mate. Welcome to Fourth Estate Radio.
Well, thank you. You were talking a minute ago about George Clooney, and he's right about some things. You know, it's one of those things, it's like in one of your ads where you're talking about telling Senator Clinton to grow a backbone. You know, if the Democrats take over, and we hope that soon, they're going to have to do some things to counteract what the Bush administration has done, and there are going to be some things that a lot of people aren't going to like.
I totally agree.
I mean, they're going to have to do some things across the board, you know what I mean, that some people are just going to say that's wrong. And, I mean, it's sort of like, you know, it's one of those things where when people tell you, you know, that it's not like, in the short term, that's fine. But, like, say, if we don't do something, our kids, grandkids, and great-grandkids are going to be so poor they ain't going to be able to do anything. You know what I mean? They're going to be spending all their money just paying interest on loans.
Absolutely. And one of the things, Luke, that I think is interesting is that, you know, when Bill Clinton was in office, you know, he was perhaps the best Republican president we've ever had.
But anyway,
when he was in office, you know, he was able in 4 years to balance a budget which, you know, had just seen 12 years of runaway spending.
I
think it can be done.
Well, I mean, he was a governor, and I mean, he had to do that every year. I mean, that's just the way he, you know, he came through, came up. You
sure.
know, he had to do a budget every. See, like I say, Reagan, both Bushes, it's like they've got a credit card and think no one's ever going to see a bill.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're just like, here, charge a little bit more. It don't matter, you know. I mean,
sorry about that. I was just going to chime in and say absolutely, but please go on.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things. It's like say, I mean, it's a shameful thing. I always talk to Bob about the media, and it's a shameful thing right now. The problem we've got in the media is none of the media is saying these things. The only people you get mostly saying this are the people in the media now who are like say either comedians or actors.
Right.
I mean, to this day, I still say the best commentator we've got right now on the TV is Jon Stewart.
Well, absolutely, and parody is sometimes the last shelter for a bit of truth, and where the last bit of protection and freedom of speech can still kind of live while it's being quashed everywhere else, I reckon.
Well, you know, it's like they just recently had the stories on Media Matters where they were talking about how the Sunday morning shows, you know, are pretty much conservative dominated now. I just wonder tomorrow when we watch the shows, all right, we just had this whole thing with Ports. I just wonder if you'll see anybody that even resembles a liberal Democrat.
Oh, and if you do, it'll be a 5-on-1 considered balance.
Well, I mean, they'll stick Joe Biden on and swear he's a liberal. I mean, it's like, God. or, you know, you can see some of these stories, I mean, where they'll have somebody like, who is it, Bob Schrum. And it's like him and Biden, I'd just like to tell them both, you know, gentlemen, I'm sure you all do nice things, but get off TV for about a month. Just go walk away from it, you know.
Yeah,
Joe,
it's like
Joe
it's
Biden,
like
I swear, if you hold a camera up and just say there's cameras on, Joe Biden will appear instantaneously.
Out of thin air, he will.
He will. I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, I really would love to see a forum sometime. I would like to see, to me, who I think the two hardest guys, men, one from the House and one from the Senate, are the fellow who really brought up this whole thing with the ports was Russ Feingold.
Yes.
Who I really like listening to. I mean, he's a little dull. You know, even that. Sometimes that's what you got to be. I mean, to go into the hard parts of it. And the other person I think who does the best job and almost never see him on TV, because I'll admit it, I mean he's not exactly you'd say the most charismatic person is Robert Waxman.
And Bob Waxman from California has been incredible with staying on the money trail.
I mean he is one of those people. I mean he's sort of like. The late Senator Simon used to be. He's one of those people, you know, I mean, he's not flashy. He's not gonna dazzle you with personality. But, you know, I mean, you've got to have somebody like that who keeps an eye on the books.
That's right. I think the other Luke, is that what's really interesting is that, you know, Bob Waxman and John Conyers both have been gathering evidence since day one against some of what the Republican administration and some of what the Republican Congress is doing. And I can, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see when we do, not if we do, but when we do get a majority in the House again, what they do with that information.
Well, the thing of it is, I have a feeling that what you're going to do is say we were to take either one of them, House or Senate, in November. I bet you on that evening you can go over to the White House and see the barbecues fired up. And light a plume of smoke where they're burning every ounce of paper they can that they don't absolutely need.
Exactly.
I mean, that's why, you know, I mean, that's why Dear Leader, you know, says he doesn't use email. I'm sure as they go along, they're cleansing records. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, you bet they are. They're having bonfire parties, man.
I mean, like you say, I mean, I'm sure that I still always remember the time when, was it Rove, was it his briefcase or something, and they found the PowerPoint where he had all this stuff laid out, and somebody had found it. I bet that the day after they went through it, I bet cleansed every computer file they had.
Yeah, of course they did. Well, you know, this last story that I just, or one of the last stories I just covered before we went to our break, was exactly about, you know, the fact that, you know, all of a sudden they find 250 emails that are supposedly that they haven't turned over in 3 years.
I know.
You know, I find that really hard
to... Remember how much they made out of it? Oh, by the way, they found a printout from Rose Law Firm in some of the paperwork and said, oh, this was hidden. It's like, hidden? Hell, it was just misfiled in their stuff. At least it was there.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, at least it was there. Exactly. I did want to ask you a question, though, Luke, before we get off the phone, and that is, you know, what do you think it's going to take to bring the South back over to the Democratic side? Well, that's a loaded question, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it's one of those things. It's sort of like this whole thing with the port story right now. I mean, it's like Bob and I were talking the other night on this. I said, here is something dropped into the Democrats' laps. I mean, here's something where they can look to the right, even though they're not really, but I mean, they can appear to be onto the right of George W. Bush on this whole thing with port security, which is something they've always been pushing while the Republicans have all been pushing airline security, which, I mean, has to be done, but not at the level they've been doing it. But it's one of those things. I told Bob, I said, I'm just waiting to see how the DLC screws this up. I mean, I'm just waiting for it to put out a press release saying we're on the wrong side of this issue. I mean, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, say, every time the Democrats take a step forward, the DLC kicks their legs out from under them.
And I can't help but wonder if that's somewhat a Republican plant, in a way, you know, the DLC.
You got to wonder if some of them aren't. You know, I mean, I don't think maybe some of the top stuff, but I'm sure somewhere inside there they've got, you know, there's people that's working both sides of the street.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely, man. And it is that, and I reckon that the DLC is the ultimate divide and conquer. You know, that divides the opposition. Because the real liberals will never go with a DLC candidate.
Well, you know, it's like we were talking about there a minute ago. We were talking about the Sunday shows. If they have a Democrat on there, it's a DLC Democrat 9 times out of 10. I mean, you know, it's like, say, they aren't going to. It's like we're talking here about the ports thing. Now, tomorrow, how many shows do you think will have John Conyers, Robert Waxman, or Russ Feingold? I mean, like I say, you couldn't buy them time.
Yeah. But Luke, I want you to think about that, man. And if you feel so inclined, give us a call back next week, and you know, let's talk about, because there are areas of this country. I firmly believe there are areas of this country that, with the right amount of attention, could be brought back over to our side.
Should be.
You know, because the problem is that the Democratic Party as a whole really hasn't been paying the attention that needs to be paid, and maybe that's part of what you and I can do.
One thing you got to say, though, I enjoy about having Howard Dean is, at least Howard Dean, I think, has learned the fact that don't worry about the national, work on the local, and if you get the local, it'll build up to the national.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that you know, I think we've learned is, you know, guys, work on the low level things and work your way up. Don't try it from the top down.
This is where I think Howard Dean is doing that. I remember when he was down here in Sydney and I saw him speak and I had a chance to chat with him afterwards. And, you know, he said, look, start with running for bloody dog catcher. Mm-hmm. This is how the Republicans started doing it in the 80s.
School boards. I mean, it's like, saying, don't worry about the guys at the Senate and the House. They'll take care of themselves. Help the ones that are trying to get on as city councilmen and or county commissions or aldermen or whatever.
Right.
Work from there. Work your way up. It's like I said, we learned about trickle down. That don't work. Let's work our way up.
That's right. Well, yeah, we shouldn't be applying Reagan-esque economic policy to the Democratic Party, should we?
No.
Well, last week we had a gentleman on, Roger from Northern California, who is actually doing that right now. He's trying to help take over the Democratic Central Committee there and turn it back over to the progressives. So,
it's like,
you know,
we're not the people. We should be working from the bottom up.
Exactly.
All right. Luke, y'all have a good evening.
Luke, thanks so much for calling, man.
All righty. See you, bye.
Have a great night. Okay. And also, on line two, I believe we do have Andrew from New York. Andrew, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, man. I'm doing fantastic
good
for a Saturday night.
That's very good. I just wanted to call up and say hello to Fourth Estate and love what you do. I try and listen to it often.
All right.
Right
well,
on, man. Thank you very, very much. That's great.
Yes. And besides that, I was, you know, when you're talking about Enron, and I happened to come across something today where it said about an UAE offset group. And I don't know. It looks, you know, it's probably all legal. It's like 2002, so.
Okay.
I think maybe there's a link.
Sorry,
I'm sorry, John. John said he didn't catch what you were saying. I'm sorry. If you could repeat that.
Oh, I said about a United Arab Emirates office group, and it was a company about natural gas production and and delivery in the Middle East. So, and that's connected with Dubai. So, and Enron's name was mentioned in that.
Okay.
So, I don't know. It's an older report. It's from like, you know, 2-3 years ago. So.
Well, Enron, you know, I really basically made their mint by trying to control energy, you know, and drive up the demand to artificially inflate the prices. So, you know, that falls right in line. I mean, there's a direct connection.
Yeah, and you know, it was another corporation, MetGas. That was, I think, another one of Enron's, you know, offshore corporations. So.
Well, and remember that the very first Enron experiment was the water fiasco in the 80s during Thatcher in the UK. Mm-hmm. Before, it was all the same blokes, and that was the first one where they actually took over just the natural resource of the water and privatized it.
So that's just it.
Well, you know, Ken Lay, I think, deserves a special place in hell, but that's just me.
I concur.
Well, I'm glad you do.
Yep. So, talking to you.
Yeah, great talking to you, Andrew. Man, yeah. Do call back, man. Glad to have you on.
I'm a little cold right now, so you know my voice is probably a little raspy, but
sounded great to me, man.
No worries, man. And hey, email us that link at John@Fourth Estate Radio for that thing that you have, and we'll have a look at it.
All righty.
Thanks, man. Thanks for calling in.
Take it easy.
Have a great night. All right, and. Well, John, that is some great conversations that we're having with folks tonight. If you want to get in on the program, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And you can reach us here on the Head On Radio Network. This is Fourth Estate Radio with Bruce Birch and John Fox. John, what do you think about that idea that he was just talking about? I mean, that there might be a direct link from the UAE to Enron.
Okay, I was having trouble understanding him on my end a little bit. Okay, I did catch it right. Because, I mean, unfortunately plays into my ever-growing tinfoil, starting to, you know, need its own zip code, when it comes to how, you know, there are these corporate interests that want to control everything. You know, it just seems it's like they have their hands in absolutely everything at the moment. You know, the nut jobs have taken over the asylum. I really want to see what it was that he had there. Because, I mean, you know, we were going to get into this a little bit later. But, you know, the whole port debacle thing, you know, going on in New York and whatnot. And I told you off air earlier that, you know, that same outfit. You know, actually owns Adelaide's only port, container port depot thing that they have. And it basically handles a whole lot of the Australian military gear. Like when they go off to, Iraq, it's going out of there.
Yeah. Well, John, looks like we're heading right into a break. It's 48 minutes past the hour. You listen to Fourth Estate Radio, John Fox and Bruce Birch. We'll be right back.
This is Isaac Hayes. Music and children. Have you ever wondered why young people take to music like fish to water? Maybe it's because music is fun, plain and simple. It offers kids a way to move their bodies and use their voices. It opens up their minds to dream about great dreams about where they can go and what they can do when they get older. As a young boy, I remember. Our kids, American kids, come from more cultures and backgrounds than any nation in history. And sometimes the most fertile common ground they share is that of music.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. March is Music in Our Schools Month.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree, and I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer, too. And when we do, it can be very hard for us to talk about it and get support because nobody expects a man to have breast cancer. But I know one place to get reliable, timely information about breast cancer. Breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the Internet that translates all those big medical words your doctor uses into plain English. It helps you understand what kind of cancer you have and what treatments are out there. It helps you get your head together and make a list of questions for your next doctor's visit. And it gives you all kinds of other good information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio, and I've taken my seasickness pills because Bruce wants to talk about Condi Rice.
Imitrol, John?
Please, take it away.
That's anti-nausea medication, by the way. Yeah, I do want to talk about this thing with Condi, but, you know, before we do that, thank you, Andrew, and thank you, Luke, for calling in the last segment, some of the wonderful ideas you guys brought up, and we're gonna pursue that in the future with, you know, trying to make some links between some of these things. We've tried that a lot with this show, I would like to think, haven't we, John, with trying to create some links between...
You know, things have kind of changed so dramatically with the way we've been doing things lately. The linking process has not been quite up to speed the last couple of weeks because it's just been chaos getting the show done, but we're settling in. Some of the links are up there now. I'll get the rest of them up at the end of the show.
Right.
Please talk about Condi.
Yeah. Well, I did, you know, I was, and actually, you know, you're the second person. You're not the first person that I've said this to. I said it to another person recently, I think a couple of days ago, and the guy was so, it floored him so much that he actually, like, danced around for about 5 minutes, and then he went, wow, that's a wild thought. But it really amazes me how Cheney, it's like all of a sudden, you know, if you look at the chatter, now, you know, you hear the president always talk about, you know, the fact that there's increased chatter, you know, when all the terrorist fear mongering was going on. Mm-hmm. Increased chatter in back channels and stuff like that. Well, we're seeing some increased chatter in some of the front channels with regard to Cheney. And this latest story about these emails, I think, to me is a direct, it's they're trying to spell it out that this guy's going down. And when he goes down, who do you think the most likely person to be appointed vice president is?
Well, I follow your logic there, and I have been catching that the White House is none too pleased with Dick Cheney over the shooting the guy in the face incident.
Yeah, that could really ruin your day, you know.
Well, you know, and like I said, this just it freaked me out when he came out and apologized to Dick Cheney and his family for having gotten in the way of his gun. But, you know, man, I see where you go with the logic. Yeah, she is kind of the next one in line. But, man, you know, I dislike Dick Cheney. I think he's the Antichrist. But, man, a Condoleezza Rice as vice president, I reckon that lizard woman would just be out of control with that kind of power.
Well, I just can't help but say that it really looks like they're grooming her for this position. And the chatter also is, you know, in all the right-wing publications is that, you know, that Hillary is the front runner. You know, every poll that you see puts everyone way back at the back of the pack, and then Hillary Clinton is raised up. And it kind of bugs me because it gets under my skin that there is this, they're anointing people, and we're still 2.5 years away from any election.
Well, you know? I totally agree with you, and I just keep, you know, Cheney's a bloody, I think he's finally, you know, in the Rovian post-Straussian world of right-wing politics, you know, he's a problem, and I think it's the same Rovian whatnot with the media control that's actually putting this Hillary as the front runner thing out there, because you and I know, as we go talking in the chat rooms and whatnot, the real progressives are not the ones that might be and think, oh, this is great, you know, we'll have another Clinton. No, she still takes money from Enron.
Right.
She's part of the DLC.
She sat on the board of Walmart.
NAFTA. You know, you have to really look at the candidate herself. Even though there's part of me that likes Hillary, I wish she would come out against the war, and I wish she would not take that kind of corporate money and be a more of a real Democrat.
Well, and I totally agree with you, John, with that. You know, but when I say that I think the whole thing with Condi, the reason why I think Condi is going to be the one that they pick to sit in as vice president, when, you know, I'm really seeing Cheney as he's a cooked bird.
we can only hope.
Yeah, he's a shot quail. But he has created this atmosphere within the government which is totally corrupted. And so, I mean, they're trying to cut him loose. And I think that and some of the folks in the chat room, namely even Sarah, says, you know, he's not going down without a fight. And I do believe that he's not going to go down without a fight. I also think, though, that if Hillary Clinton is the one that they're raising up to be the Democratic front runner, that the only thing that the Republican Party can do is to try to put Condi to run against her. Because I don't think they're going to try to run a man against a woman.
I can see where you're going there, man. I can totally see where you're going there.
Because the political price that they would pay to run a man against a woman would be huge.
Yeah, I mean, I see where you're going there. But I also think that maybe her stepping up is just also maybe the other.
You still there, John?
You know, she already stepped up when stepped down, you know? So maybe she, you know, it's just she's part of the inner circle, so she's next to move up.
We got a break coming up. It's 57 minutes before or after the hour, and this is Bruce Birch. That's John Fox. Say hello, John.
I'm here.
All right, we're going to be right back with Fourth Estate Radio. We'll welcome your calls right back after the top of the hour. Between the haves and who have not, there's a bomb for every city. Now they don't know. The Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I've watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, you know, get a backbone, for God's sake. You know, stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything, you know, anything else, is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, this is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing, you know, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future. This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
It's Grace.
We're actually very boring people, Rama. That's why we call ourselves homebodies.
Well, it's Rama.
Sure. I mean, yeah, you know, group sex for us is when we're both involved.
That's a crap.
It's really, really smart.
We're a nice little Petri dish here in Vermont because you can experiment.
Join Grace and Rama, homebodies, every Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the web at homebodies.ramabahama.net.
Fourth Estate Radio News. I'm Bob Kincaid. Republican congressional leaders are on the verge of an agreement to capitulate to White House demands to allow the United Arab Emirates to run ports in several American cities. The GOP leadership is hammering out a compromise to allow the deal to proceed with an additional 45-day investigation period. New Jersey Governor John Corzine said Saturday that the Bush administration is being, quote, casual about our security, unquote. Corzine's remarks came in the Democrats' response to George Bush's weekly radio address. In that radio address, George W. Bush said that he will talk about energy issues, health care, and his war in Iraq when he meets with the nation's governors Sunday and Monday. Bush also called for Americans to be less political.
To improve health care, keep America competitive, achieve greater energy independence, and protect our nation, we must put aside politics and focus on what is best for the future of our country.
In the address, Bush failed to say a single word about selling American ports to the United Arab Emirates. The highly controversial ports deal caused consternation in other quarters as well Saturday. Union truckers and longshoremen gathered outside the Wando Welch shipping terminal to protest the Bush administration's agreement to allow a United Arab Emirates company to take over significant operations at six U.S. ports. The demonstration was part of others staged around the country. Union leaders have said American companies that are willing to bid on the port operations should be given that chance. Most demonstrators held signs with the phrase, "Secure American Ports." It's a bad deal all the way around, Charleston longshoreman Tory Fields said. Fears generated earlier today of a ricin poison scare have proven to be unfounded. An emergency management official in Texas said that a whitish-brown powder found in a roll of quarters at a University of Texas dormitory laundry was most likely not the deadly, untreatable poison ricin. Initial tests suggested that the coins were coated in ricin powder. The EMS official based his opinion on the fact that no one had shown symptoms of being poisoned. Police in Kirkuk, Iraq, said so-called insurgents bombed a Shiite shrine Saturday. The shrine, not considered major in the Shia pantheon, commemorated an ancient imam. The shrine of Imam Ali al-Rida in Tuz Kumatu, located southeast of Kirkuk and visited frequently by Shiites, was destroyed in the bombing at approximately 4 a.m. Saturday local Iraq time. And finally,
nip it in the bud.
America has lost one of its most beloved comics. Don Knotts, who played the bumbling Barney Fife on The Andy Griffith Show, passed away in a hospital in Los Angeles Friday night. Don Knotts was 81 years old. For Fourth Estate Radio News, I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Just when you think things couldn't get any crazier in this country, now we have this deal where a company controlled by a country that finances terrorism will be put in charge of security at our ports. As usual, it turns out that some of the people involved behind the scenes are pretty close to the White House. For the record, if you wanted to smuggle a nuclear or biochemical device into this country, the ports are probably the best way to do it. Feel any safer? I sure don't. I read that even some of the president's supporters in the GOP are a little nervous about how this is going to play to the working-class cult members in the red states, but if I were them, I wouldn't worry too much. I think Bush can go on national television and have sex with a mule and the cultists would nod approvingly. After all, the man primarily responsible for 9/11 is still free, Iraq is becoming a great training ground for terrorists, and worst of all, their taxes haven't gone down at all, but they still think Bush is doing a heck of a job. Of course, once the Diebold machines are in place all over the country, it won't matter what they think anyway. And I'm sure the so-called professional media will soon call this story dead, just as it's called all the other stories dead. Halliburton, Plame, Abu Ghraib, WMDs in Iraq, what happened on 9/11, the 2000 elections, and so on. No doubt they'll find a way to blame it all on President Clinton or find some other story to distract us with. Maybe some white woman will disappear or something. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Head on. He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no Oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
Welcome back to the third, the final, the whopping fat third hour of Voice of State Radio. Over on the other side of the planet from me is my buddy Bruce Burks. While I'm in Sydney, say good day, Bruce.
Good day, Bruce. This is the only show where the Bruce guy is in America and not in Australia, right?
Well, yeah, and you know, it's that old Monty Python skit. I think some people will remember it. Anyway, man, we got talking about the ports, and I think you wanted to pick up with something on the ports as we come back here, didn't you?
I did want to pick up with something on the ports. Thank you, John. This is a story that's out of Reuters, and this is just to give you an idea of how done this deal is. Okay, and that is a delay in allowing United Arab Emirates company Dubai Ports World to run U.S. port terminals should be for as short a period as possible, a company executive said on Friday. Senior Vice President Michael Moore.
Jesus, you're kidding.
No, it can't be the same one.
Can you imagine how many people get confused getting an email from him on the right wing?
Oh, my gosh. You're talking about a nightmare scenario, right? Senior Vice President Michael Moore said in a telephone interview, "We have a business to run. We'd really like it to be as short a time, as short as possible." His comments came after the state-owned company, notice that, said that it would proceed with the $6.85 billion takeover of the global operations of the British P&O company, making it the world's third-largest port operator, but not take over management of the U.S. assets and ports like New York while it discusses security concerns. In other words, what they're saying is that they're going to give George Bush time to win over the Congress and then come in full-bore boogie with this. And I got to tell you, John, you'll hear one of my opinions about this a little bit later on in the show in Bruce's Bruising. But I think we're making a mistake if we are simply saying this is not a good deal because of the fact that this is an Arab company. Would you agree with me there or not?
Oh, well, yeah. Now, okay, let me throw something in that I hadn't told you about before. Let me throw this little thing that happened about a week ago here in Australia, and I actually rang Bob's show and told him about this when this all came up. I don't have his name off the top of my head, but the guy that kind of handles, the Australian version of the FAA came out to make a statement, and Singapore Airlines had applied for some route space on some of the international flight routes to and from Australia that they currently don't have access to. And they were turned down for whatever reason, you know, whether you agree with it or not, you know, this decision was made. But then in the same breath, the guy turns around and invites Singapore Airlines to bring their foreign investment into Qantas, the Australian national airline. Okay, do you see where the juxtaposition of these two things that came out of the same mouth in the same statement to me do not add up at all?
Right, it's
the same thing
a...
with the ports, that letting control of these things to foreign ownership. What, I mean, what purpose does that serve except just stupidity, as far as I'm concerned?
Well, you know, one thing to keep in mind though, John, is that foreign ownership, it's really managing, and they're not really owning the ports. What they're doing is they're managing the ports. And the other thing too is that, you know, these ports have already been foreign managed by the British company.
Well,
right?
Why, okay, in the story that you read, why the big rush? Okay? Anytime that, you know, someone says that they're right, push as fast as possible in this kind of a situation, I'm wondering exactly whose business it is that they're wanting to do. And, you know, I have to doubt the motives, and I then want to look at it even closer.
Well, and I think that's what Congress is going to do. But you know, just to add a little bit more flame to the fire, or fuel to the fire, I guess I should say. Today, another breaking news. And this is out of the Guardian, an AP story that says that the company has decided to indefinitely postpone its takeover to give Bush time to convince Congress that the deal does not pose any increased risks to the U.S. from terrorism. You know, again, they use the same quote that I just read from Michael Moore.
but that still does my head in.
That's me too. But apparently, there's an interesting twist to this story, and that is that Homeland Security, the Department of Homeland Security, Fatherland Security, originally had objected to this deal.
Well, yeah, and that's what I understand. They thought this was not a good idea.
Now, the uproar over DP World has exposed, as we, you know, this is right out of this AP story, has exposed how the government routinely approves deals involving national security without the input of senior administration officials or Congress. So the very people that are making decisions about the security of the United States are not even bothered to be, you know, to be consulted. And,
well,
you know,
it all just plays to being insane to me.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say. I mean, you know, Tim Dunlop at RoadToSerfdom.com, you know, had a post that, you know, with all the noise that was going on, he decided to look into ports here in Australia, and he found out that the same outfit, you know, owns the Adelaide container port, blah, blah. And so we don't know any more than that. It's just kind of like, you know, you go to their website and there's a bit of a thing going, we do this, and that's it. And so I think hopefully in the next, you know, week or so, maybe we'll see some things uncovered looking to exactly what the history is going back. Because there's something about, I don't know, you're a nation's airports. It's, you know, it's waterways and ports. Why those aren't being handled by civic entities, the management, the whole thing, like completely is just it doesn't add up at all. I cannot see why you would privatize this. It
well,
just seems
and that's
like a not, you know, it just doesn't seem like an option.
Right, and this is the Bush administration. This is the Republican way, though, John. It's about, you know, fueling the taxpayer money into the pocket of the larger corporations. It's the direct line, you know, trickle out, if you will, philosophy.
No doubt.
But the one upside is that John Corzine, who is the Democratic governor of New Jersey, used to be Senator Corzine, is suing to block the deal, and this is one lawsuit apparently that has been filed. Also, Governor Ed Rendell of Pennsylvania has said that if this goes through, he may not renew the lease to the ports in Philadelphia.
Interesting. Well, you know,
so the governors are weighing into the process.
In a second, because I
go ahead.
Well, this is good. This is good because governors actually exude a lot more control than I think people realize over day to day events. You know.
Yes, and they do, and I think that you know that this is something that if the Democratic governors stand up and create a situation of safety, that this can be nothing but good for the Democratic Party. I'm understanding,
yeah,
John,
and
that
the governors have control of their own money. But yeah, we have Peter on line one, don't we? I bet that's Peter from Tallahassee.
I wonder if it is. Peter, is this you?
Tallahassee, hi kids.
Hey, how you going, buddy?
I'm doing fine for an old guy in the middle of the night. You guys are going to kill me.
Well, what do you come armed with this evening? You got? Do you have scripture? What do you have?
Well, what I have tonight is the report is out, and it's something that we all know to be true in our hearts, but now we have a concrete report. It's just been released, and it's published in the current issue of the Journal of Religion and Society, and it's a publication of the Creighton University Center for the Studies of Religion. They have a fellow there. He's an evolutionary scientist by the name of Gregory Paul, and he has done the research and looked at the correlation between levels of popular religion and various societal health indicators of 18 democracies, including the United States. And he ranked those societies based on the percentage of their populations expressing an absolute belief of God, frequency of prayer, attendance at religious services. And then he correlated that data with the rates of homicide, sexually transmitted disease, teenage pregnancies, abortion, and child mortality. And as you might guess, he found that the most religious democracies exhibited substantially higher degrees of social dysfunction than societies with a larger percentage of atheists and or agnostics. And of the nations that were studied, the United States, which of course has the by far the largest percentage of people who take the Bible literally and express an absolute belief in God, taking the Bible literally being the key indicator there. And they by far have the highest levels of homicide and abortion and pregnancy and transmitted disease. And, of course, this really comes as no surprise to us. I think we've known this for a long time. We've known about the division between the red states and blue states. For instance, homicide rates are far higher in red states. Six of the seven red states have the highest homicide rates in the country. I could list them off here, but you know they're spread around the country. We all know.
Well,
red states.
You know, they probably have a few more guns laying around the place if you want to get into simple terms. But you know, I mean, we have seen you and I have spoken at length about other issues like this, where the most fervent deniers of something are usually the ones at the activity. You know, like how we've spoken about homophobia.
Well,
you and
yes,
I
this
at great length, and it's almost like the same kind of parallels. It's these places that claim to be the most righteous, and yet they have the most skeletons in the closet.
Well, this is absolutely true, and the thing that angers me here, it was hard to bring this to you, because as you know, I attend a church and I tell people I love Jesus, but I'm no Christian. Because the word Christian has been taken over and perverted by the right in this country to the point that it's become meaningless. You have to explain what Christian means. You have to say, I'm not one of those Christians, one of these Christians, blah, 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 blah. Therefore, the word has become meaningless. You have to explain it every time you use it. So, go ahead.
No. I would have tried to qualify your stance on things, but you just said it, people of true and honest faith, which I think when people who are spiritually connected question their own spirituality always.
Well, always. That's the only way you can grow. And this whole thing about this firm belief in God and this literal acceptance of the Bible. You see, in my world, the Bible, it's always God. I mean, it's certainly not. It certainly contradicts itself. I can give you 100 examples, and it's certainly not accurate from one chapter to the next in terms of being integrated with itself. But it's the best we've got. It's only a signpost. But these people who have this God thing. Okay, I give them that. They've stolen God, but they damn sure can't have Jesus. You know what I'm saying? This is the man who walked with the poor, who walked with the disenfranchised. And other religions have people who represented these values also. But and so I'm not, you know, trying to bash anyone who doesn't think the way I do. But what I'm getting at is this whole hard-ass God of the Old Testament. That's kind of where all this evil stuff stems from. We tend to ignore the man that we celebrate Christmas for, whatever that means, the sacrificing dead trees time of the year. But it's just disturbing to me. But and it's something that I've known in my heart. We've all known in our heart that these people are just represent evil, and it's just unfortunate that's who's speaking for us these days.
Well, Peter, it's my definite belief that George W. Bush is a complete fraud when it comes to religion. Okay? I
have to agree.
I think that he had nothing going for him to start with. All right? I mean, there's a man who is a failed oil man. I mean, you know, he couldn't find oil in some of the oil-rich the most oil-rich place on earth. You know, he had a whole string of failed business ventures. He had nothing. But you know what he did have? He had Karl Rove. And you know what Karl Rove had? Karl Rove had the political sense to say, let's tap into the people who don't think. Let's tap into the people who take everything literally and will listen to anything we have to say.
Well,
and convince them that you are the most pious, reformed, deep Christian, moral, person that they've ever seen. And you know what? They bought it.
Well, they did buy it. And the fact that he doesn't attend the church often, but when he does, he attends a Methodist church. And I've got to tell you, that man is no Methodist. His actions violate every principle of the Methodist doctrines and the social their books regarding social policies within the Methodist Church, and he's completely at odds with every one of them. The man is no Methodist. The man has no clue. He has all the depth of a PowerPoint presentation.
I love it. All the depth of a PowerPoint presentation. That's great.
Well, I have a very low opinion of PowerPoint presentations. So I just kind of wanted to get that off my chest. But I do have to say, we are in the middle of stormy weather here in the South, and several times over the last 10 minutes or so, my lights have dimmed. And there is a possibility I could just go click.
You mean that's not the execution chair there in Tallahassee?
Ha ha! That's so funny. No, it's not funny. But thank you, Bruce. That's the funniest unfunny thing I've heard all evening. Hell yeah! And it's probably Texas sapping the power out of Florida via Enron.
and via Dubai, right?
Yes. God, I hate these people. I am broke through with them.
Oh, my goodness. I love it. This is why I love having you on the line, Peter. Oh, boy. Well, hopefully you'll have your...
One thing that comes back in that that really kind of almost makes me smile in a way but doesn't surprise me currently, because I think it's just that we're living in a time of, like, heavy, heavy religious fundamentalism, which fundamentalism always hijacks the original message completely for some other, you know, twisted kind of concern. And you mentioned that the, did you say that the populations of people who consider themselves agnostic?
Yes, the societies which have a higher percentage of agnostics tend to have less of the social ills, divorce, et cetera, than, and then this also applies to the state level, red-blue state level. It certainly does.
Because I prescribe to the agnostic thing, but I always fall into the bit of the catch-22 and the hypocrisy. You'll notice a lot of the music that I select for things in the show, like the Neville Brothers thing, opened up with, you know, Jesus said, "If you love me, you'll feed my sheep." You know, and in reference to what's being done to these workers. So, like, one of the things that I think is interesting about all people who fall into that agnostic category, none of us say that there isn't a God, or none of us say that, you know, Christ didn't exist or any of this stuff. We just, many of us just don't think you guys all have it quite right, or...
yes, they don't have it quite right. You've got
Or you see so much fundamentalism hijacking real spirituality that you have to look at every single person.
And the word,
you know,
fundamentalism, the word annoys me to no end. How can you be proud of that? Suppose all you can handle is fundamental reading or fundamental math. In other words, you've been held back for years, yet you proudly say, "I'm a fundamentalist." My God, people, move on. You know,
yeah.
Something you grow
into. It's kind of like Christianity is lucky to still have people like you to kind of still carry the torch going, you know, I really, really like what this is about.
But it's true of other societies,
I don't
too. It's
take
fundamentalist
a book that is actually a collection of secondhand accounts, if you look at it literally. You have too many people taking as the direct word of God. And I think that's where a lot of these fundamentalist things get so badly, like, wrong.
Oh yes, well, it's riddled with errors. In one chapter, the legendary ark, there's two of every animal, and in another book, you look and there's seven of every animal. I mean, you know, which ark? I could go on and on, but you know, it's riddled with errors. But it's all we've got. So let's get off this fundamental BS. And try to get the general gist of it.
Right,
you
the
know,
principles. Right.
Ridiculous. Absolutely.
Yeah, well,
it's not just Christian fundamentalists, because you look at in the Middle East right now, the whole fervor over the cartoons. A lot of whether you believe how it's being told to us or not, you have some of the more fundamentalist stirring up the anger.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes, always at the center of controversy and division, and it relates to my line on God is more valid than yours, and it relates to the very concept of God is on my side. BS! What kind of crap is that? At best, we can only hope to be on God's side. You think God is small enough to be on your side? Oh, for crying out loud! I am so sick of these people.
Well, we are too. That's why we're doing this, Peter.
Man, brother. I just one of those oddball holy rollers. I just can't help myself. I just have to do it. There's nobody else for me to tell this to. Nobody. You know, I've got to tell somebody. You're my only hope. Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan,
help me.
If we're your only hope, my friend, I'm sorry. But you know what, Peter? We really appreciate you calling in, the point of view that you bring to this program is really fantastic, and we're very grateful to you for calling in and bringing us that story. And we'll talk to you real soon.
Okay, dude. You have a good evening.
Okay, you too. Thanks
a
lot for calling.
Good night, John. Good night, Bruce. Bye-bye.
Good night, Peter. This is Bruce Birch for Fourth Estate Radio. John Fox is over on the other side of the world. And if you want to call into the program, please do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. We'll be right back after the bottom of the hour. It's 29 minutes after the hour.
Hello. Can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Hello?
Hello. My name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know... One small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
One voice. It can get the point across, but it only carries so far. Add a voice. It's richer, louder, but that has limits too. Add a third voice. It's even more powerful. Add another, and another, and many, many more. And we are stronger than ever. That's the power of a community coalition. They help community groups, faith groups, civic organizations, PTAs, employers, and many others in your community organize their resources and focus them where they're needed most, like fighting to keep kids away from drugs. Ask a group that you belong to if they should belong to a community coalition. It's easy to get involved. Visit helpyourcommunity.org and they'll tell you exactly how your group can help. That's helpyourcommunity.org, because you get more
when we get together.
Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Well, my baby, she don't want me around.
All right, you're listening to Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch, and over there on the other side of the planet is my friend John. You still there with me, John?
Yeah, man, always, whether I'm breaking up or not. And don't forget the Get John Off the Pots appeal at Fourth Estate Radio. Get us that gear upgrade. You can donate at fourthestateradio.com. Take it away, man.
Absolutely, yeah. Please do get John off of the telephone, man. I bet your arm is cramping by now.
Well, thankfully it's not quite that archaic, but, you know, it is very rock and roll. I changed things over to my what used to be my touring lead singer stand for, you know, bands that I work for. It's like a chrome, you know, good old straight rock stand. And I'm doing like, you know, the old rock and roll thing. I got the cable all twisted up and walking around in circles, carrying it, you know, like David Lee Roth. It's great.
All right. I think our next step is to get a webcam going on there. Maybe we'll do that in the future. There's one story, John, that I wanted to, you know, before we get too far now, you know, it is 34 minutes after the hour. You can go to fourthestateradio.com and help John get off the phone by visiting that site and looking for the donate button and then generously donating what you can. We're trying to get a radio network off of the ground, head on radio network here with Bob Kincaid and John and myself. And we'll talk more about that in future shows, but, you know, you are watching and you're listening to, actually I should say, the genesis of this project. So if you're a listener now, you know, we really appreciate you and we really want you to keep listening and come back and tell your friends, you know, the more the merrier.
Hey man, I'm sorry. Our wonderful producer there in West Virginia is sitting there taking the piss out of me over here. I'm sitting there talking about being rock and roll. He's going, no spandex.
No spandex. Oh, my gosh.
He's
yes, please,
guy.
Lord. But we did have a story that I wanted to get to before we get out of here tonight. We're about 25 minutes away from the end of our show. Don't cry. We will be back next week. And that is that William F. Buckley, in the National Review today, 3 o'clock this afternoon, he posts an article which essentially says, it didn't work. And this is the title of this. It didn't work. And what he's referring to is the invasion and occupation of the nation of Iraq. And let me read you a couple of paragraphs, because first of all, I think this is very important. Number one, because this guy has been one of those people that has sort of been the go-to guy for right-wing policy for the last, 20 years, John, I guess?
Oh, yeah. He's been right up front.
So for him to come out and say this is pretty amazing. Let me read this paragraph. He says, our mission has failed because Iraqi animosities have proved uncontainable by an invading army of 130,000 Americans. The great human reserves that call for civil life haven't proved strong enough. No doubt they are latently there, but they have not been able to contend against the Icemen who move about in the shadows with bombs and grenades and pistols. The Iraqis we hear about are first indignant and then infuriated that Americans aren't on the scene to protect them and to punish the aggressors. And so they join the clothing merchant who says that everything is the fault of the Americans. And further down in this article, John, he says, let me just read this part. The failure in Iraq does not force us to generalize that violence and anti-democratic movements always prevail. It does call on us to adjust to the question, what do we do when we see that the postulates do not prevail? In the absence of interventionist measures, which we simply are not prepared to take. It is healthier for the disillusioned American to concede that in one theater in the Mideast, the postulates didn't work. The alternative would be to abandon that. To do that would be to register a kind of philosophical despair. The killer insurgents are not entitled to blow up the shrine of American idealism. Mr. Bush has a very difficult internal problem here because to make the kind of concession that is strategically appropriate requires a mitigation of policies he has several times affirmed in high-flown pronouncements. His challenge is to persuade himself that he can submit to a historical reality without forswearing basic commitments in public policy. He will certainly face the current development as military leaders are expected to do. They are called upon to acknowledge a tactical setback, but to insist on the survival of strategic policies. Yes, but within their own councils, different plans have to be made, and the kernel here is the acknowledgement of defeat.
Okay, man. Tell me if this is it in short. We lied. It blew up on our face. We tried to cover it up. Now the only thing Bush can do is get out without admitting anything and covering everyone's ass. Is that about what it comes to?
I think that's what he's trying to say.
Sounds like to me.
So here's a right winger. Well, of course he's going to say let's cover our butt because we don't want to tell the truth. We have a nation to invade, probably 20 years from now. But I think
he alludes to the fact that they lied because it was that whole, what was the first part, the those professing or something like that. In other words, it was a noise machine to get us in, and they saw through the noise machine eventually.
Exactly. I think it's important though, mainly because again, this guy is one of the leading speakers for the right wing. And he is, he's the editor of the National Review, blah, 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 blah. So that's a pretty big deal. And I think that, again, the voices are getting louder and louder and louder for the removal of our troops from that nation. If you'd like to – go ahead, John.
Well, we've been talking it for a while, you know. Regardless of how we got into this thing, why we were there, who lied, where we are at the moment, our occupation is the big problem. We need to get out. And these people, the Iraqi people, gave us plenty of time to get the power on and all this stuff, and all they're seeing is, you know, their place being destroyed, possibly by even fake bombers, as we've talked about before, you know, done by the British or whatever, you know, whatever. And yet none of them are being hired to rebuild their own country after, you know, it had the crap bombed out of it.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, I think it's a simple fact, you know, and it's going to be a really hard pill for the American people to swallow, is the fact that we're going to get out of this thing and it's not going to be pretty. And there
no,
is going to be no saving face.
Yeah, and I you heard me sort of laugh a little bit there, but it was more of the kind of laughter that one has when it's like I'm shaking my head and I'm going, you know, it just amazes me that we're in this deep, you know, and there is at this point no easy way out. John, I also had another story that I wanted to cover tonight, and this is about the U.S. Justice Department suing Pennsylvania. And more specifically, Westmoreland County, for not complying with the Help America Vote Act.
Oh, yes. You and Mary were chatting about this last night, weren't you? She's sent me some of this stuff. Please do tell.
Well, you know, it's an interesting situation. Westmoreland County, apparently there was a ruling that came from the Commonwealth Court there to block the county from buying all electronic DREs, which is direct record electronic voting. And so, you know, the group of voting activists were able to persuade this court to block the county from moving ahead. And the county found an obscure, I think, 1928 law that apparently said that that paper was the only way that could be used to vote. And so now that they've blocked the use of electronic recording devices for the vote there in Pennsylvania, the U.S. Attorney General is setting the end of next week as a deadline to reach an agreement and avoid a lawsuit. The state could forfeit as much as $23 million in federal aid if it doesn't act.
Oh, my God! It's opposite world on steroids.
Oh, my goodness. Apparently,
oh, man.
The commissioners in the county, which has used lever machines for decades, has planned to buy more than 700 touchscreen machines from ES&S, which is Election Systems and Software, for $2 million. And, you know, and so apparently the Westmoreland County election officials have decided that they need to bring the weight of the federal government down on these activists who are really just trying to make sure that their votes are being counted. And it's really a sad thing.
If that isn't just, you know, the Justice Department or whatever being, you know, used as an arm of this corporatist regime kind of thing, you know, it's, you know, states, you know, exercising its rights. And then you have the federal government suing the states over making sure that the vote is right. I mean, it's just insane. I just can't, you know. That is so opposite world on steroids, but it's maintaining that smokescreen constantly and doing things like this that, you know, it's the Help America Vote Act. Yeah, it's Help America's Vote Get Hijacked Act, you know. Using the doublespeak language, you can play it off to the people as though, you know, the state's doing the bad thing to people that don't pay any attention.
So what we're seeing, you know, again, is the opposite world. And you know what? I think I'm gonna keep an eye on this because it's my, you know, I really, you know, not just because it's important to one of our listeners, but because, you know, as Huey, I think is Huey Long from the great state of Louisiana, said once, it doesn't matter, you know, who wins or loses. What matters is who counts the votes.
You bet, man. You bet. You know, I do believe that a little birdie said that we might be starting on a regular voter rights and everything. And speaking of the devil, we have the suspect on line one. I believe Mary's on line one. Should we actually need to take a break. So why don't we go ahead and take the break ahead of time, Bruce, because we have your Bruce's Bruising to get in, and we'll come back and take Mary's call.
That sounds great, Bob.
And we'll wrap things up. Bob, if you want to just play us out here, man, you're listening to Fourth Estate Radio.
McGruff, the crime dog, here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is...
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride. And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write... Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time. You'll be helping me take a bite out of crime.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion makes sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball. While gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. One minute you feel fine, and the next... your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because, after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg. Sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately. Because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. This is John Foxman, and we're wrapping things up. But, you know, right before we take Mary, housekeeping, of course, the fundraiser still continues at White Rose Society. Support Ben Birch and his efforts there because, well, his efforts make us possible. And the show is produced out of West Virginia by the one, the only, Bob Kincaid, and you got to catch his show. If you don't know him, you're a fool. And that's 7 to 10 weekdays. And, Bruce, you with me, man?
I am indeed with you. I think there was something Bob wanted to do there before we got right back into the segment, though.
Yeah, man. Well, I'll tell you what. While he gets the bruising together, why don't we get Mary on the line here for just a couple of minutes. We're going to have to keep it short, Mary. We're almost out of time.
Hello?
Hey, Mary. How are you doing tonight?
Hey. Well, I'm awake. Barely. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear what you guys were talking about. I was dealing with my kids.
That's okay. We got only about 2 minutes for you, Mary, because we're running up on the end of the show, and we got some bruising still to get in. So what brings you ringing up to us?
Well, without knowing what you guys were saying about the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Westmoreland County suit, I just wanted to call in and see if you guys had any questions about what was going on.
Well, I tell you, I think what I'd like to do is, as we spoke, is probably starting to do an in focus. But that we might have missed from what Bruce had, because basically the federal government's come down and threatening to sue them, sue the state for noncompliance.
Right, and that just happened this past week, and I find it really ironic that the federal government behind the Help Americans Vote Act is basically, the way I'm putting it, is, and the way our county executives have put it, is they're holding a shotgun to our heads. And it's not just in Pittsburgh. It's happening in a lot of other counties across the country.
Yeah, we know that. And I think starting next week, we're going to have a little bit more focus on that and make it a bit of a weekly segment. And so we're going to see what we can work out for doing that next week. I'm going to have to cut it short with you today, Mary, because we still have a couple of things we have to get in. So thanks for calling, and we will probably talk to you on air next week, I would imagine.
Okay, that sounds great.
All right. Thank you so much, Mary. Hate to cut it short, but Bob,
fine.
I do – thanks. For... a little bit of jitter in our connection here. But, Bob, if you have – Bruce's, you go ahead and roll that. I hear it's a ripper.
I'm Bruce Birch, and this is Bruce's Bruisin'. Today's verbal frontal assault will be administered to the king of flip-floppery, George W. Bush. In the 2004 presidential election, Bush made national security a centerpiece of his presidential campaign. Now with a pending sale that would hand over a large part of port security to a Dubai corporation, Bush and his cronies say, "It's fine, don't worry. If the sale doesn't go through, the terrorists win." Now, I'm not going to discriminate based on the location of a corporation's home offices, and I'm sure not going to put forth the notion that everyone from the United Arab Emirates is a terrorist. I will put forth the notion that with this administration, even security is available to the highest bidder. The thuggery of the current White House occupants knows no bounds as everyone from Pat Robertson to Shake Your Booty are calling in favors to make their millions. Yes, a British company controlled the ports in question. Yes, the fact that an Arab-owned company is taking them over makes everyone a little uneasy. Apparently, the Bush plan for oil domination has now backfired a bit. Those Arabs are not to be trusted, they tell us. Inform us of suspicious activity, they tell us. Be wary of people interested in things like bridges, government buildings, or other sites of national security interest. I ask, like a port, perhaps? The logic doesn't wash. Either these folks are okay or they aren't. Either they created the situation on 9/11 and deserve a special place in hell, or they don't. But in the interest of fairness, please don't shove a bunch of schizophrenic crap down our throats and then chant the mantra about the terrorists winning. As far as I'm concerned, the real terrorism is being perpetrated right here by trying to scare the American people. This has been Bruce Birch for Fourth Estate Radio.
That was a ball terror, man. That was great. Shake your booty, you sneaky little dog.
Well, you know me. I'm a Frank Zappa fan. I couldn't resist.
I loved it. I loved it. That was fantastic, man.
We're about 53 minutes after the hour. But, you know, one of the things that I think is extremely important to remember in all of this is that, you know, the messages, the mixed messages or the mixed messages that we're getting by from this White House and from this administration is causing just an incredible amount of confusion out there, and I don't even think many people even realize it, but you know, I couldn't help it but write something up about that, because it just amazes me. While on the one hand he talks about all this wonderful security, on the other hand he says, "Well, I didn't even find out about this until I read the newspaper."
You know what it reminds me of? You remember the Nightmare Before Christmas?
Oh yes.
Remember the two-faced mayor with the
thin
head?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, great film. Love that film. Anyway, could have been an hour longer. Anyway, but, you know, it is that, you know, there's this constant opposite world. Like, you know, Bob alluded to this week, man, you know, the 10-second soundbite, 30 seconds, you know, kind of came into the media starting in the 80s, is really coming back in a bad way because they're able to keep the thing, keep the whole situation so confused because there's no message and there's no answers to anything ever, you know?
I totally agree. Before we get out of here, though, tonight, John, I wanted to just present that this program and what we're trying to do with this new radio network is really working the opposite of all of the conventional wisdom, you know. And what we're trying to do is present that there is a consistent thread that's running throughout this administration, despite what they say. And that consistent thread is corruption, is cronyism, is selling America out to the highest bidder, you know. And the only way that we can push this message forward, John, is how?
Keep speaking the truth and not be afraid of the consequences. I think we're just at that moment, you know. And you know what I experienced Friday night down with the guys from the CFMEU, and a reminder to any of our Australian listeners: if you're in Sydney or you're connected to the unions, 5:30 p.m. out of the Sydney forecourt. We're gathering again. The more numbers, the better. And man, I'm telling you, when I was out there, I'm seeing fear, you know, and we're not talking from, you know, little guys or nothing, but these are guys that are really, really scared of what's going to happen. So, you know, thanks to our listeners. Thanks to our affiliates. Thanks to our producers, Bob, you rock. We're getting close to running out of time here. So, Bruce, what do you have going on All Things Reconsidered tomorrow?
I'm going to let it be a complete surprise, but it is going to be there tomorrow night, 10 o'clock, right here on the same Bat channel. You can listen to my solo act, All Things Reconsidered with Bruce Birch. And you know what? I mean, you know, guys, I'm just going to make this one last appeal, and that is that, you know, if you want working man's radio or working person's radio,